We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
Current existing ordinance tracks almost identically the state statutory language from the state statute that came out last year, which defined camping as overnight. And in conversations with Sheriff's Department and those who, I guess, who've been out in the field dealing with enforcement of this, there was an ask to loosen it up so that it would be for camping if it's occurring in the same places that's already in the ordinance, but even during the day.
Allison Rogers, county attorney, played the clip for you about 20 minutes ago. But since she says law enforcement said, and I have a chance also to talk with law enforcement once in a while, Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons is here with us to talk about this. This was in the conversation about the tweak of the language to remove the overnight word from the anti-camping ordinance in Escambia County, allowing law enforcement, or I suppose code enforcement, but I think law enforcement primarily, to remove people from public areas if they are camping there. First, Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons, welcome back, sir. Good to have you.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great. Better to have you with me now. So this was a problem for you guys. They say this was kind of inspired by you guys. Tell me how much of an issue, how effective this change will be. What is this? How much difference does this make for your deputies?
Well, I think you just look at a visual. As an example, you have an individual that's camping, sleeping bag, tent, whatever they got. And they're, let's just say they're across the sidewalk. They cannot do that with the current ordinance at midnight. And they really shouldn't be able to do that at noon, you know, because a lot of times we have people that are trying to traverse the sidewalk during the daytime, mm-hmm. more than they would even at midnight. So all it is it's what I consider a little bit of a cleanup language so that there's no overnight. Because overnight means what? Does it mean sunset to sunrise? Does it mean 1 hour, 2 hours? If we were to encounter somebody that's camping on the sidewalk, say, at midnight, have they been there for a while? Do we have to ascertain how long they've been sleeping? Are they snoring? What? That's just too much. Typically too much for us to just sit around there and deal with. So what we wanted to do is just take out the overnight aspect of it, or what, let's say, we did, the county did. And we have had some conversations. There have been a number of complaints, that we've gotten from both citizens and from county commissioners, and then we've had these conversations. And as always, we try to work together and let's see what we can do. It also mirrors the city of Pensacola's ordinance, so there's some consistency throughout the entire Escambia County.
So questions, and I know you don't make the legislation, so I'm asking you because you're the enforcement officer, obviously, or, you know, you are in charge of all the enforcement. So first of all, when somebody is told to leave, where do they go? Like right now, what do you do? If your officer finds somebody who's camping on a sidewalk, you tell them they cannot be here, but where do they go?
Well, see, okay, so that's a great question, and that is a whole other opportunity for me to talk about. The people that want to do good, the people that want to help people, provide services, the service providers, I hope are all going in the same direction. We have a dashboard, so we will be able to look up and see where if there's bed or available space at this location, that location. Not all of the service providers have been willing to put their information on this particular dashboard, but we do have resource guides, and we can get them to at least refer them to the services.
Is that true also during the day? I know that's true for overnight stays, but it's my understanding not all shelters are as available during the day too. So if we're during, like, somebody's sleeping on the sidewalk at 1 o'clock, you say can't do that, now where do they go?
Well, we have a list of things that places they can go, people resources they can call, contact that they can have, and they actually do a pretty good job of we do, our deputies do, and I'm assuming the Pensacola police officers do as well, okay, of having this information, these resources, the information at least to them, and so that they can whatever they want. If they want food, then obviously there's plenty of places to eat around Escambia County. A number of people are feeding them. And if they want some sort of a drug rehab or something like that, there's also contact numbers and information for that.
We also have, and the second question, I was kind of bringing this up before, is, okay, your officer, your deputy wanders into a park, and there's somebody sleeping up against the tree. Turns out it's Andrew McKay. Probably okay, just taking a nap. Turns out it's a guy with a dog and a bowl and a shopping cart and looks like a sleeping bag and a bunch of possessions. Probably not okay.
I think what you're describing is what we deal with every single day with almost every statute. The everything is written by people over in Tallahassee that rarely are on the street and know what's really going on. So our deputies and law enforcement officers, first responders, have to go there and they have to ascertain whether this is legal or not legal and all, and deal with through all this gray area. So when that's those situations, that what we're trying to get our deputies to do is to talk to them and then use your discretion. If you're you can't camp there, you can't put a tent there, Andrew McKay. You can't do that. You need to go ahead and go somewhere else. But if you're just, if you fall asleep under a tree and you have no blanket, no bedding, no pillows, no tents, then that's a little different story. You know, you don't have a shopping cart full of all of your belongings. You're not living in the park.
Right.
And, so that's what my direction is. And my hope is that this is acts as a deterrent and we won't have to do anything, you know, so we're still going to try to just talk to them, give them a warning. Hey, you can't be doing this right here. Can you go, you know, go to somewhere else, maybe a private property where someone may allow you to stay there. Or, hey, here's a list of services available to you. Mm-hmm. So you may not, if you don't want to, you may not have to sleep out here.
Or even like the county has the program of sending people back to their, you know, hometowns if it's elsewhere aside. You know, that's something, you know, that's a possibility as well.
Exactly. So that's on that resource guide.
Yeah.
These are, and we work very well with Escambia County and with the resources that they have provided to us. Again, all this is on a list and we can give them that paperwork, because almost all of them do have phones or computers, and they do have access to reach out if they so desire, and that's the key, where they have to want.
Well, you need to have a spreadsheet services to know which corner is the most productive corner. I mean, you gotta, you know,
it's a network.
They and by the way, very effective at the business of panhandling, based on, you know, squabbling that happens over turf and territory. And, I mean, it doesn't often escalate to much, but somebody was texting me earlier the other day, I was at Davis and Olive, and they're yelling at each other over who's got control of that corner for this shift or whatever. I'm like, they know where it's productive, of course, and they don't keep doing it when it's not productive.
Well, and I want to be clear, this doesn't mean that this isn't the end all, right?
Right.
And we get complaints, I don't know, 10 a day about homeless and people that, and what their activities are. But this doesn't mean that this is going to stop it, because you can still exercise your First Amendment right on the sidewalk. And sidewalk is the key there, on the side.
Right.
The place where you walk on the
side. Not the median.
Not the median.
Less than 8.5 feet.
Right.
Now.
Yeah, that's another change. We went from, the ordinance went from 6.5 to 8.5 feet, which is the state DOT recommended for safe pedestrian refuge.
I call the police not all the time, but I think I call more often than many, because I figure I've internalized, if you see something, say something. If I'm driving, there's somebody drunk in front of me, I'm calling the cops. If there's a person that looks like they're a risk to themselves, I'll call. I mean, because I don't want it to be that something happened and I didn't say anything and I didn't prevent it, whatever. If I hear gunshots, you know, I'll call it in, because I think that's what you're supposed to do. I don't think I would be inclined to call in somebody panhandling from the median where they shouldn't be, even though I know what the law is. I mean, right there across from McDonald's at Davis is a very good example. There's always somebody leaving the Grocery Advantage parking lot. There's always somebody panhandling right there. It is illegal under this ordinance, even before, now especially with 8.5 feet. But do you want me to call that in? Do you want me to call in to the non-emergency number and be like, hey, there's a guy here? You know, what do you want from a law enforcement perspective?
Well, the direction that we're giving is, in the normal course of their duties, if you see somebody doing this is a violation of a county ordinance. Or it will be. I think they need a second reading. I'm not sure.
I think they're done at the county. I think they're one reading only. It's a city county district, but I could be wrong.
Okay,
anyway.
Yeah. Anyways, but whenever we have to get the effective date, they have to register it with the state and all that.
Right, right.
So once we get the effective date, then we'll be. And if you see an individual that's camping, you know, we're camping or staying there too long in the median, then address it. That's what we're going to do. Is it a priority, like fentanyl is a priority?
Yeah.
No, it's not. So if an individual calls us, if, you know, there is a safety hazard there. If you're, some of these medians, as you're talking about, some of these medians are about 1 foot or 2 foot, and they're tight roping these medians, and they're just staying there through a couple of light
cycles. The underpass at 110 in Brent is like that, when in the left turn lanes, you know, on the off ramp, it's one thing, but on the middle lanes, it's not a safe place.
It's a tool. And again, our hope is that people will know that there's an ordinance and they'll stop doing it. Move over to the larger area, which is the sidewalk, if they feel like they have to exercise their First Amendment right.
A lot of other stuff to get to, and I know we spent some time on that, but I think it's important, and people have questions, and, you know, what can we do? You had an arrest for a guy named Willie Craig with a bunch of drugs, right? And some firearms.
Bunch of drugs, firearms. I think he had a bulletproof vest, and it does to get with the one we're talking about. He had a bunch of cocaine.
That's not illegal to own, though, right?
It depends on what you're doing. If you commit a crime doing it, it's an extra charge.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's an enhancement. Okay.
Right.
But, yeah, a bunch of drugs, a bunch of guns, and, you know, what, at a house on Mobile Highway?
Yeah, you know, I like to talk about the arrest that we're making because, you know, we can talk all the time about, oh, drugs are everywhere. But I also think it's good for people to understand that we're out there making not just – we're not talking about what I call street-level drugs. We're talking about people that are – these are people that are mid-level distributors. These are people that are poisoning our community that people end up overdosing from. And so in this particular case, it's cocaine. It wasn't fentanyl, but it was cocaine. And then I think it has some marijuana, about $3,000, and just several guns and that bulletproof vest that we talked about. So if you have to carry a gun and a bulletproof vest, the endeavor that you're operating is probably not the safest one.
Rethink some life choices.
Go to school. Go back to school.
Find something. George Stone will take you.
And, vocational. Okay.
Teach you how to work on airplanes.
Learn to be a plumber.
Electrician.
I don't want to pick one trade
over any other.
HVAC.
The license plate frame thing, I think, is very well. It's clear now. It's just it cannot be the letters of the license plate or the yellow sticker. Everything else doesn't matter. That's the key, right?
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. Yeah. Now you can't have even a clear covering over it that would interfere
with
the cameras and that sort of thing. But we get a lot of calls on this, and in our stance is that as long as we can read the tag and the expiration date, we're good.
Yeah, the there's been a deeming, apparently, that the information like the In God We Trust or Escambia County at the bottom is not considered essential information, so obscuring that is not a violation of the statute is kind of how I read a release that came out yesterday or today on this. So.
Yeah, the sheriff's office says if you can read the tag, we're good.
You had a deceased person found at Pace in Fairfield. No foul play?
No foul play suspected. We are working with the medical examiner's office to determine the exact cause of death, but at this point we don't suspect foul play.
A case that got dismissed we haven't had a chance to talk about this much. The case against Deputy Collier. Somebody had gotten, basically they were trying to make a stop on somebody's property. They were in their car. They revved the engine, went into gear. He shot him. And then because he said, you know, he was afraid that they were going to drive off and hurt him in the process. There's another deputy involved in this. He winds up getting exonerated on summary judgment by the court. My read of this is if somebody's in a car and they go into gear and rev the engine, you don't have to wait for them to start driving at you. They are a danger right then. It's like, well, he's got a gun. He's got it cocked. He's pulling it up towards me. Do I have to wait until he's actually aiming at me before I can shoot him? I mean, it's a weird standard to try to sue this guy or to criminalize this behavior.
Again, I talked about how difficult the job of a law enforcement officer is.
Yeah.
In this particular case, the individual had a warrant. It was dark, I think it was a backyard. In fact, I know it was a backyard of a home. And he tried to stop the person that had the warrant on him. That person chose to get in the car, put it in gear, and drive towards a deputy. It's reasonableness. Is it reasonable to think that the deputy's life was in danger at that point? I think that anyone that has had a car going very quickly towards them and they have very little way to get away.
My understanding was the car hadn't moved yet. That was the issue in the case.
My understanding was the car did move and then it was start and stop and it was trying to back out of it at one point, and then the deputy was a small contained area.
Yeah.
And the deputy had little chance to retreat or to dodge from that. It's unfortunate. Certainly it's unfortunate. This happened a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it was initially thrown out and then it was appealed and then thrown out again. So it's over with now. It's just example of some of the difficult things that a law enforcement officer has to do. Now, no one wants to stand in front of a car that's moving towards it, right? You know, you don't want to find yourself in that situation.
Right.
There are many situations that deputies would rather not find themselves in, as you mentioned. At the other end of a firearm, we don't want to find ourselves in that situation, but we have to take action based upon our job. It's our duty,
right,
to do these types of things. And we had an order to pick up this individual who had a warrant on him. They chose to drive that way.
And they had lots of off ramps they did not take. I mean, they had lots of chances not to do everything that they did. So it's not as though they were, you know, not a factor in what happened, essentially. So, yeah, when I read the case and thought about it, I thought, I mean, this, I don't see the issue here particularly. You had a colonel, Kevin, is it Pachuki? Is that how you say his name? Graduated the FBI Academy?
That's right. He graduated last week.
That's four for your agency now? You, Andy Hobbs, Tommy Leiter, and...
David Ingram, and Kevin Pachuki.
Oh, so that's five now. Okay.
Five of us, yeah.
That's rare, right, for an agency this size to have that many?
Yes. Sorry, I just got a text that said...
Do you need to run?
Deputy involved shooting. So I need to head out here and
okay, I understand. Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff. Chip Simmons, thank you for the time as always. We'll talk to you, well, not next week, but the week after that. I'll be out next week. So
sounds good. All see right. you then. Y'all take
thanks
care.
So much.